Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Columbus City Schools levy went down hard yesterday, nearly 70% of the voters rejecting the proposed property tax increase, and more than 60% putting the kibosh on a separate issue that would have created a new district auditor position. Opponents didn't say it was about the money exactly. Coming up, we'll hear from opponents and proponents about their plans going forward. But first, we turn to WOSU News Director Mike Thompson for more on the election day results and details. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Ann.
So we know, or we've been told that about $2.5 million was spent on the levy campaign, brought down by some $4,000, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less, in the campaign spending opposing it. That's a stunning defeat.
Yeah. When you think about if the theory that you can buy an election, this is an example of how you cannot buy an election, because the supporters vastly outraised and outspent the organized opposition. That's organized opposition. But I think that the reason why it lost, first and foremost, is it was a lot of money for property owners. And that...
You think it was the money,
Yeah. I mean, it was $315 for every $100,000 in value. So for an average house in Columbus, now averages including all houses, you know, the really poor houses in the urban areas, the Franklinton and things like that, to the mansions, the average house would have paid $450 more a year in taxes, which isn't that much. You know, that's kind of an average levy. But if you own a house in Clintonville or Victorian Village or German Village or the Northwest Side, they were doing the math and they were looking at a tax increase of about $1,000.
But if they believed that $1,000 would achieve what had been promised, wouldn't it have been worth it to a lot of them? Because it's okay to vote no campaign sort of told me people probably would support a levy for Columbus schools.
Yeah, I think it was too much and too soon.
Okay.
I think the voters clearly said that. It was too much money, and we haven't seen enough reform for us to cough up this much money for the schools, given the data rigging scandal and the report cards that came out in late August that showed most of the schools had D's or F's. So it was too much and too soon. School levies always come down to turnout. And if it was a modest levy increase, somebody in one of those houses may not have been motivated to vote. They might have said, well, my vote won't count. I'm not going to get out there. Where the levy supporters, teachers, parents, their friends, their families, get out and support the levy. The sticker shock drove turnout among the folks who were opposed to it, because they saw that $1,000 bill staring them in the face, combined with the fact that they didn't like the way the schools were being run. That drove their turnout.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the election or the referendum yesterday on, I guess it's not a referendum, but anyways, the voters' rejection of the levy, the Columbus City Schools levy. If you have a question or comment, if you voted for or against and you want to give us a call and tell us why, 614-292-8513. To what extent do you think, Mike, the number of elements in the proposal, because you vote for the money, but then there were all these things they were going to do with it.
Levies always kind of have that. They always have a part of the levy that's going to help the little kids. They have a levy that's going to help the high school kids. They're going to have part of the levy that's going to help the middle school kids, because that's a strategy to get all of the parents on board. So there was going to be pre-K. There was going to be computers for middle school and high school kids. There was going to be high school construction and things like that. But what hurt it were the other elements, the charter school element, because a lot of teachers do not like charter schools. Teachers are a huge voting block when it comes to school levies. So if you have teachers who don't like that component and are driven to either stay home or vote against it, that hurts a lot of your core supporters. A lot of, you know, frankly, liberal voters who are opposed to charter schools, mainly white liberal voters, who don't want to see their tax money funding privately run schools, public schools, but privately run, that was an excuse to vote against it. So I think the charter school element combined, I think the auditor was kind of, I mean, it lost because it was kind of like a sort of coattail loss. I don't think people really were that concerned about that. They want more accountability, and this might have done it. But the charter school hurt them, and the price of the levy, and the fact that I think that the reporting that we did, that the Dispatch did, and the campaign that the opponents had showed that the reforms, while noble, were soft. There wasn't a whole lot of detail on the reforms, the way they were worded, if you look at them. It was, we're going to make all of the schools A and B within 6 years, but it didn't explain how they were going to do that. They were going to replicate schools and things like that, but it was really kind of nebulous and vague and things like that. And voters, I think, saw that.
Same with the pre-K promise. A lot of people just didn't believe it. They know what early childhood education costs because they're paying for it privately, a lot of them now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you read the reform, the recommendation was a quality pre-K experience for all students in the district. Well, what's an experience? Is it actual bricks and mortar school where you send your kid all day? Or is it, you know, giving books to parents to read to their kids? What is a quality pre-K experience? And I think that the opponents did a good job of sort of, you know, drilling down to say there are a lot of questions here as to what this money we're voting for is going to pay for.
There might have been one winner in the loser side. Dan Good, the interim superintendent, he impressed a lot of people moving around. Do you think he's going to stay with? Do you think he's going to go the distance with us or not?
He would have been in better shape if they had won yesterday.
Yes.
I think that one of the criticisms is there wasn't enough house cleaning. The people, largely the people who were responsible for the data rigging, are still there. There have been a handful of retirements and departures, but there was no massive house cleaning of the folks who were involved in the data rigging. Now, union rules and civil service rules and all that stuff gets in the way. But I think the voters saw the reporting on that and said, you know, and that's the superintendent and the school board.
Which means they should have put off the levy vote then until that was resolved.
The investigation is not even complete yet.
Right.
I mean, the state auditor's investigation is not complete yet into the data rigging and grade changing. There's a federal investigation going on, criminal investigation. We don't know where that is, but that's still ongoing. The opponents were saying, let's let this all play out, see who's responsible, you know, punish them, then move on and then vote for more money. So I think voters, you know, that combined with the fact that it was a large increase.
Okay, so let's listen to Mayor Coleman. He said last night he sensed the levy vote was in trouble during the final weeks of the campaign.
I heard it throughout the campaign. You know, why should we provide more resources when there's these trust issues that exist?
Okay, joining us now is Christina McMenemy. She's a parent volunteer at itsokaytovoteno.org. Christina, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Anna. It's nice to be here again.
You agree with the mayor's assessment, or do you have a different take on the issue?
Honestly, I think a lot of what happened yesterday was several different factors. I think that overall it was an issue of there wasn't enough. There was just a lot of unpopular items in this plan, and I think that that resulted in voters having several items to choose from that they could take issue with. It wasn't just one single thing, and I think that the district did a really poor job in demonstrating the value of a lot of those items to bring the public onto their side.
The name of your campaign, itsokaytovoteno.org, suggests that you expected some voters to feel uneasy about opposing this levy. Who were you talking to when you named the campaign that way?
Mostly ourselves, actually. Because it was the group, you know, that I'm with, we are all made up of parents who all have children within Columbus City Schools. We are all people who have never voted against the levy. You know, generally, we are the people to be right on the front lines of, yes, we want to support our schools. We want to do anything we possibly can. So we really felt conflicted this time with this plan put before us and did not feel this was the right plan for the right time. And we had to tell ourselves, you know, it's okay. It's okay to vote no on this one. It's okay. You're not going to be going against everything you believe in by voting no on it.
Have you ever voted against a levy?
Never. Never voted against a levy. I've always supported schools.
We kept hearing that over and over again. People who have been longtime supporters of levies saying, I always vote for the levy. I always vote for schools. And this time they said, no, it's the first levy defeat in a generation in Columbus City Schools. First in 23 years that a levy has lost. So I think a lot of that feeling was out there.
Right. And I mean, it was painful. In some ways, it was painful. We were all commenting yesterday just how hard it was going to the poll and having to actually vote no. You know, looking at the results today, are we happy with it? I mean, I don't know if happy is the right word for it because, you know, we met our goal of not having the plan implemented. But, you know, we firmly believe that our work as parents and as our group is just starting because defeating a levy isn't our end goal. We all want children to succeed. You know, we all have the exact same goals. We want high-performing schools for our children so that they can be successful, you know, productive adults. I think, you know, both sides of this issue are all in agreement on that. But
go ahead.
So yeah. I feel that, you know, we all have kids in Columbus City Schools. So, you know, we're very committed to remaining engaged, and we really want to see meaningful improvement.
Were you surprised by the numbers of when the vote, 69% to 31%?
I was, actually. Yeah, I think I know I personally was very surprised by the results. I expected, I had hoped that we were going to come out against the levy, but I wasn't expecting that large of a no vote. Especially just considering we had been working so hard in the past few weeks to get our message out, combined with also with John Beard and with Pastor Schneider and Tyrone Thomas's group, Citizens Against Issue 1551. We all worked together trying to just get our message out to different groups targeted throughout the city. It's just a message of just educating people and informing them about here's what's in the plan, here's what's not so good about it, here's what we're questioning. And, you know, we were just a tiny little grassroots effort. I think combined in three groups, maybe $4,000, you know, was spent on it. So it was very surprising to us to see that large of a margin on it.
Mike Thompson, the three groups, what kind of impact? They came from a lot of different places.
Yeah. I mean, you had representatives of, you know, parents and then, you know, faith leaders, and then John Beard Group was sort of like a, you know, just an accountability. That was their basic, they didn't want no charters, no cheaters. They wanted more accountability. They didn't want to share money with the charters. I was surprised as in the last days of the campaign, most of the time in Columbus, the African-American communities overwhelmingly supports levies. And in the dispatch poll that came out a couple weeks ago showed overwhelming support in the African-American community. But I got the sense in the last couple weeks of the campaign that support wasn't there, at least not to the same degree as it has been in the past. I think that Sam Gresham talked about it at a Columbus Metropolitan Club forum. There was a lot of mistrust in the African-American community that it was the power establishment downtown that was pushing this levy. And they didn't know what it, they didn't quite trust them. So it was more than the trust that the school board and the school administrators would fix the problems. It was also a matter of trust and whether or not African-American voters trusted the solution that's being put forth by, the establishment in downtown Columbus.
Christina McMenemy, can you stay with us for a few more minutes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. That's Christine McMenemy of the It's Okay to Vote No.org organization. Coming up, we'll have Sam Gresham and others in this conversation about the Columbus school levies. Went down big yesterday in a 69% to 31% vote. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We are talking about the Columbus City Schools levy went down yesterday definitively. With us still, Christina McMenemy, parent volunteer at It's Okay to Vote No.org, and also Mike Thompson, news director at WOSU. Christina, in a news release put out this morning, you called for another Columbus education reform plan process that includes parents. Are you suggesting that the same group that the mayor put together come back together plus parents?
I don't necessarily think that we mean the same group that the mayor put together. I'm saying that we would like to see the district, whoever is going to be involved going forward, because I don't know if that same group is planning to stay as a group together. And I would actually personally advocate for disbanding that group and starting again. But I would love to see more parent involvement. We really want to see, we would like to see a meaningful conversation just about real reform with the school board, with the district. We want to see, you know, this is really the chance to bring the whole community together, I think. You know, a lot of the folks, I think, who voted yesterday, who were parents, they felt marginalized in the development of the plan. They felt like their voices weren't heard. We've heard that a lot from a lot of parents. They felt, and from teachers as well, who felt that their voices weren't heard in the development of that plan. So now we're at this point now where we can come back and say, let's try again. But this time, let's make more effort to involve everyday parents, everyday teachers in the creation of a real reform plan. I think it's something that we, you know, we're not saying a no vote doesn't mean that we're not committed to the schools. We're just saying that we weren't committed to that plan.
And there's a new group now, Parents for Real Education Reform, right?
Yes, that's the new name. That was our PAC name during the campaign, and now we're using that name going forward.
It's not as catchy as "It's okay to vote no." .org. But I'm wondering, it's one thing to get people to vote against something, mm-hmm. just traditionally politically. What are your plans going forward to make something of this new group, Parents for Real Education Reform?
Well, we would like, you know, we're definitely wanting to stay involved, and we want to stay, we're kind of sending the message of, look, we are here, and this levy kind of served as a wake-up call for many parents, I think, in the district, and a lot of teachers as well, to say this is something, you know, we need to take back our children's education. This is our chance to really get our foot in the door and say, look, we really want to be involved in this. We have some amazingly intelligent people as teachers, as principals. We've got very committed parents who really want to see their children succeed. So let's start taking these motivated minds and let's start putting them to work, providing innovative solutions to really address all of the challenges with all of our schools.
Christina McMenemy, what is real reform? What is real innovation? What does that mean to you?
That's a great question. It is something that I think we want to see changes that are going to be put in place, changes that are going to have an immediate impact on our children. A lot of what we saw in the levy, we didn't see a lot of details. When you looked at the goals that were stated in the plan, there was a lot of question of, well, how are you going to get to that point? With no real detail of how they were going to get. We have all A and B rated schools within 6 years. Well, how are you going to do that? There wasn't a lot of how. So our goal is, let's stop. You know, we have our goals already set. We all know what our goals are. We want great schools for our kids. We want fantastic education. Let's drill down to the how. I think we really need the how at this point. And this is what we want to do, is start putting minds together and saying, let's come up with the how. Let's actually create that reform and put things in place as soon as we possibly can to start seeing those improvements within the school.
Christina McMenemy, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having us on.
Christina McMenemy, she is a parent volunteer at itsokaytovoteno.org and also part of the founders of Parents for Real Education Reform in Columbus City Schools. Joining us now is Rhonda Johnson, president of the Columbus Education Association.
Good morning.
Welcome back to the show, Rhonda.
Good morning. Thank you.
The mayor said that there were trust issues to explain the overwhelming defeat of the Columbus City Schools levy at the polls yesterday. Jonathan Beard, who led the campaign No Cheaters, No Charters Columbus last night, said that there were many elements of the proposal that turned off voters. Let's listen.
There was so much in this proposal that people could find to hate, whether it was the charter schools, the gross amount of the proposal, the lack of reform, the vagueness of the proposal. They did not, you know, they're coming to us for approval, and they did not make their case.
Rhonda Johnson, given all the talks you participated in over the course of the campaign, what did you come away with to explain the defeat of the levy? Was it anything like the, litany of Mr. Beard's assessment?
Well, I wouldn't go as far as Mr. Beard's assessment, but I agree with the mayor that there are certainly trust issues with the Board of Education. And that showed at the polls, and it showed who, board members weren't reelected. Incumbents, two of them were not reelected to sit on the board. So I think there were trust issues. The fact that we still have this data scandal hanging over our heads has a lot to do with it. You know, people don't have, they don't have faith in the school board and the administration. The superintendent has done a great job, and our interim superintendent's done a great job, but he's still pretty much an unknown person in our community and in our schools. So there were lots of things that I think played into the defeat. I heard a lot of ads that simply talked about a 24% tax increase, and people ran with that. So it's all is easy to get a no vote. It's harder to get a yes vote when you're talking about, you know, raising someone's taxes.
If you could have simplified it more, if there's something that you would have shot for and above all others, what would it have been?
I think it was just the trust. I think it boils down to the trust, because when the community puts their trust in us, we do better at the polls. And I just think that there was a lack of trust, you know, with the community and the Board of Education.
Rhonda Johnson, it was pretty obvious that the school board took a back seat in campaigning for this levy. The mayor was out ahead. You were as head of the teachers' union, you were one of the leading spokespeople for this for the levy. The new superintendent, who was a leading spokesperson, as well as the members of the Education Commission. So obviously, you felt that the school board members were not the best people to send this message to the voters, to try to convince them to vote yes. So obviously, you felt trust was an issue from the get-go. Why did you do it now? Why not wait 6 months or a year to go to the voters?
You know what? The students are going to show up, and they showed up today. And, you know, they need a great education, and I think our plan was right on track. Waiting doesn't help to me. Our kids need this plan, this transformation right now, and that's why we didn't wait.
What, going forward, will you do differently? Do you think then now it is time to wait until after the resolution of the data rigging scandal?
You know what? I think we might have some answers when that investigation has been completed. And, you know, we'll have to see it. Maybe, you know, May is not the time. Maybe it's a year from now. I don't know yet. We just have to look at. We have to look at all sides, but the bottom line is, you know, the kids are going to be there every day, and we still have to educate them and give them the best education that we can. That's the bottom line. Whether the levy fails, whether the levy passes, whenever that is, we just have to do the best with the students we possibly can.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest, Rhonda Johnson, president of the Columbus Education Association. Rhonda, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Also with me in the studio, WSU News Director Mike Thompson. We have an email from Angel. She says, while I supported the school levy, I understand why people wanted more details. But it irks me that opponents don't complain that the attendance scandal probably occurred because school funding is linked to attendance. This penalized poorer districts that need the funding most because they typically have lower average attendance. Let's hear from somebody on the same score, but who opposed the levy. Shirley and Sharon Woods, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I want to be real quick because I got a couple of rhetoricals and then I got a question. If you're, I did this for the children. I wrote it no. If your child came home with D's and F's and said, well, now I want a 24% raise in my allowance, I think you'd be setting a bad precedent to give it to them. And then you figure with D's and F's and the school board is asking for a 24% raise, what would they ask for if they were getting A's and B's? And my question is, on that ballot, it talks about mills and stuff like that. That is an ordinary language that most people talk about, not my parlance anyway. How come it didn't say a 24% raise? And how come it didn't say, $76 million raise? And why didn't it say, like you people have been saying, making it very understandable, $315 for every 1,000, and for every 100,000? It seems like it was just, you know, kind of shady. And I had other things, but I can't remember them. But that's the question I'd like to understand about that language. Why isn't it just put in everyday language, you know, like everybody can understand? The mills and all that other stuff, I'm pretty educated, but if someone put me on the spot and said translate mills into, dollars, I couldn't do it. So I'll take my answer off the air.
Mike Thompson?
I think, you know, there is a long ballot narrative, and I think that some of those things are in there. I think they have arguments for and arguments against, and I think the $315 figure was on the ballot. I might be wrong, but millage is extremely hard to understand. I think legally they have to put that on the ballot. When they are constructing a ballot question, whatever the vote is, the supporters of that measure word it very carefully. They're not going to say this is going to raise your tax bill by $1,000 a year, because that's going to hurt their chances for passage. So they word it carefully. Healthcare freedom amendment. I mean, that sounds great. I mean, it doesn't say in there that, you know, that was the one that barred the individual mandate for insurance coverage that was passed a couple of years ago. So ballot language is often nebulous, and partly because of legal reasons, partly because of political reasons. And that's where we come in as journalists to do the translating. Here's what it is. It's a 23.6% increase, so we'll round it to 24. It's going to pay eight instead of $1 million for charter schools. No, it's $8.5 million a year for charter schools. It's $8.5 million a year for pre-K. So that's where I think journalists... You know, I think we did a pretty good job. I think the media in town did a good job at explaining what the money was going to pay for, how much it was going to cost, and then voters can decide. And that's, I think, the process. That's all we can try to do. Millage, I couldn't explain inside and outside millage either. I'm with you.
Joining us now is Sam Gresham, Jr. He's a political consultant. He spoke against the levy last week at the Columbus Metropolitan Club. Welcome back to the show, Sam.
Thank you very much, Aaron, for having me here with you this morning.
Okay, so what did you make of the definitive defeat of the levy? Did you expect that much of an opposition?
Yes, I did. I thought the poll that was put out by the Dispatch misrepresented what I was feeling in the community.
Which was basically a dead heat.
Right. I wasn't feeling a dead heat. I was feeling, what did the Dispatch say this morning, crushed. I felt something like that was going to happen. But I think there are a couple of things I'd like to introduce into this calculus and the discussion this morning. Mm-hmm. One is, yes, the voter fervor. And I think voters were given permission by a variety of places to say no. And I agree with Mike. 24% increase was a major issue that nobody wanted to talk about. But I think there's a much more profound story that nobody's talking about. How could corporate Columbus miscalculate so badly the opinions and feelings of the citizens? How could you do that and then spend $2.5 million in being so wrong? I think on that side of the calculus, somebody's going to have to answer for that. Now, on the other side of the calculus, we spoke, and there was retribution. We denied it. But now, going forward, what do we do now? How do we put the program, the school system back together and move forward and build something positive? That's the most important thing right now. How do we bring people together?
The It's Okay to Vote No.org has, you know, has spoken. They want to start a new group for New Columbus Education Reform Plan. They want to call it the Columbus City Schools Parents for Real Education Reform. What do you propose going forward? What sort of shape will this process take now? Do you think that the mayor's commission, the group of people he appointed to that, should go back to the drawing board, or do you think it should be another group of people?
I think it would be wrong to reconstitute the Education Commission. I think a new group of people should come to the table with a set of values and ideas that they subscribe to and put something together. I don't think it should be done in 6 months. I think a year is enough time for us to sit and struggle with it. Plus, it should be a major community organizing effort. We should bring people who have never been involved in the process into the process. We should think about different things. And the foundation of the educational process has to deal with something I talked about, and I'm really going to push more again, concentrated poverty and segregation. If you don't put that into the education quotient or formula, you're going to miss the success of the program. I'm willing to go to the table. I'm willing to bring people to the table. I'm willing to do anything. I have 4 grandkids in the Columbus Public Schools, and I care about their future. But I care about all the kids in the Columbus schools. So we need to sit down. Now that we understand where the community is, how do we rebuild? What do we put together that works? And how do we involve as many people as possible?
Sam, is involving as many people as possible going to work? Because schools have so many special interests, from the teachers' union who are trying to protect their members to folks in a neighborhood school who don't want their school closed. And real reform requires tough decisions and sacrifices. And with the schools, there are so many different groups out there that want their slice protected. Is it possible that any size commission, whether it be 25 members or 15 members, can really bring about change without having to, they call it co-blaboration, where nothing gets really, no hard decisions get made because nobody can reach an agreement?
Mike, you don't know this about my background, but my degree is in urban regional planning, and I'm a community specialist. Now, you didn't know that I worked in Chicago when the tearing down of Cabrini Green. You want to talk about a discussion? I worked in the city of Columbus in the community development process. It can be done if you structure it. And it's called citizen participation. Back in the day, it was called CP. There are methods, there are procedures, there are processes that we have to bring to the table now that I've used and other professionals have used in the past, because it's critical now. We're only going to get this opportunity once. We're only going to be at this junction once. And I think if we do it right, we can create a foundation. Yeah, we have to let people vent. We have to let people say what's important to them. But you have to take them through a process that says everything can't be done and things need to be done in phases. I've seen it work. I've done it all over the country. I've done it in Columbus. So I know it can work. Is whether the people who come to the table are willing to do that.
Sam Gresham, you said the problem is concentrated poverty and segregation, but there was nothing mentioned about that in the levy. When the voters go to vote on things, they don't. What would they vote on that would address what you say the problems are?
I'm glad you raised that question. If we restructure the schools to say that in high concentration poverty communities, we will offer the following services. We will have 2 social workers in the school. We will have a clinic. We will have robust after-school programs. We will have robust summer enrichment programs. We will have a parent college where parents will come in and learn how they can best help their kids in their educational process. Those are just a few ideas that we can put on the table. And all those things will be outlined. This is what we're going to do. And then we're going to measure it. We're going to say the first level of measurement is X, Y, and Z. This is the second level of measurement. And then we want to know how much of the cost benefits are associated with this. How are we doing that? So it can be done, but the first thing, and Mike talked about it this morning, is trust. We have to galvanize this community together. Corporate community, neighborhood community, middle class, poor people, rich people. We have to create a process where they can all come in and join in this process of improving Columbus schools. They've spoken. What was presented was something they didn't want to support. Now the issue is, what do we build going forward?
Do you still think there's a role for the city in this process? Okay.
Unequivocally. I think the thing that happened here, and if you look at the process was used, it was cookie cutter from some other community. They didn't let it organically grow. They didn't give it the energy that an organic process. They didn't understand how to do that, how to work with community groups, how to create spirit, how to get people to understand. And frankly, I don't think they were interested. But other people who are interested in those approaches, we know how to do that. I mean, 40 years of working in communities, 20 years at the Urban League, there were so many problems that we saw that we had to bring community groups in to solve. But it starts with trust and that they're going to be heard.
Sam Gresham, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
That's Sam Gresham, Jr. He's a political consultant and has been speaking out against the Columbus Schools levy, which did fail at the polls yesterday. We will continue our conversation when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Columbus City Schools levy went down hard yesterday with nearly 70% of the voters rejecting the proposed property tax increase and more than 60% putting the kibosh on a separate issue that would have created a new district auditor position. Joining us now is Michael Cole. He, until yesterday, was a candidate for Columbus City School Board. He's been elected to join the school board, so I guess he's a member-elect. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Ann. I'm glad to be here.
You were elected with the strong backing of the mayor, and you were a strong backer of the mayor's school reform proposal. Still, you did very well in the election, unlike that. What should city council's role be in this going forward, do you think?
Well, first and foremost, I'm thankful across the board for getting the support of folks even like my big brother, Mr. Gresham, who just got off the line. I'm the only candidate, literally, who had support from everybody across the board, whether it were for issue 50 or 51 or against it. So I'm thankful for that. What I see the role of city government being in helping turn our schools around is giving us the capacity on the neighborhood level to be able to do that. How are we looking at strengthening neighborhoods, period, to help our centers of those neighborhoods, our schools, become stronger? How do we work and think collaboratively in terms of using city resources, i.e. public safety, to make our schools safe havens for our children? There are any number of things that we can look at and take into serious consideration, if you will. But for me, foremost, is making sure that we put student achievement first.
Why do you think the levy failed?
I think that the levy failed because of a trust issue. And I love my mayor and appreciate the work that he did.
Well, he agrees with you.
I think it was a trust issue on the part of the mayor and a trust issue on the part of the district. This just wasn't made clear enough to folks. Folks didn't just have enough opportunity to really find out and get substantive questions answered about what the return on investment is for them. And for such a big ask and such a quick turnaround, I just didn't see it happen.
So it was, go ahead, Michael.
Let me use the old Paul Begala metaphor. The Titanic did not have a communication problem. It had an iceberg problem. You really think it was a communication problem that led to a 69 to 31% defeat?
I think in large part it was a communication problem and an iceberg problem called the culture of Columbus City Schools, if that makes any sense.
Tell us about the culture. Where is the iceberg in the culture? Because it's the first levy to fail in a couple decades.
You have right in front of us, and I mean, this has been, you know, one of the most focal points of public education here in the city, the fact that there was a scrubbing scandal that went on. The details of the investigation that's taking place both federally and state still have not been released. There's some trust issue with the administration. There's questions around, how we're dealing with our financial resources here. There's a $51 million surplus in the district. I mean, when you have all of these questions lingering in the air, you're telling me on one hand we've got money that we weren't expecting, but we've got money now. But we still need more money. And, yeah, we're working on fixing our problem, but we really haven't fixed it yet. We don't really have a plan yet. We're working on it. Trust us, though. It's very hard for people to take that and accept that.
An email from Abel wrote, if it's just a matter of trust, then why didn't issue 51 pass? If it's so easy to get a no vote, why is it this is the first Columbus levy to fail in decades? Don't let them get away with making those excuses. This was a bad plan. That's why it failed. Also, how are readers supposed to trust the polling of the Dispatch? Why did the poll show the levy as a dead heat when it turns out to be an absolute landslide instead? Mike Thompson?
I have a theory on that, covering tax votes, especially tax votes for schools. People don't like to tell strangers they're going to vote against schools. They don't like to say, I'm going to vote against levy because it's anti-kid. And I think that polls, when it comes to levies and things like that, can be unreliable. So that's my theory on why the poll 2 weeks ago was so a dead heat, and the elections today or yesterday was so one-sided. Also, there was a 10-day gap there. So, you know, there was still a lot of undecideds in that poll, 11%. If they all voted no, which the Dispatch suggested they were going to, and the people started doing the math, between the time that poll came out and Election Day. That would explain the difference in that.
Well, the point about the emotional issue of a school levy notwithstanding, yeah. I suppose there's a lot of political consultants out there who would like to know how they can narrow something that much in just 10 days.
Yeah, and plus an off-year election, you're not sure who's going to turn out. The turnout numbers are, it was a beautiful day yesterday. So, I mean, that
were
helps
the numbers
turnout.
Pretty typical?
19% turnout for the county. We don't know what the district turnout was.
That's what we want to know,
19%
right?
For the county, which is 2 points higher than 2009 when the mayor led the income tax passage. So the turnout was slightly higher than it was in 2009 in August, and the result's much different as far as the tax increase goes.
Michael Cole, we talked with a member of the It's Okay to Vote No.org and Christina McMenemy, and she said they started a new organization in the wake of this levy failure. It's called Parents for Real Education Reform in Columbus City Schools. One of her criticisms was, and we've heard this from others, is that parents, just ordinary people, were not involved. They were all big shots on that commission, not just ordinary people. They did have public hearings, but apparently people didn't feel engaged.
Again, it goes back to the idea of how well informed and how well engaged people were in the process. What I want to ensure moving forward, because I am Joe Parent myself. And I know that there were some people on that commission, like Lolita Augustine, who not only is the PTA president, but she's also a parent herself. What we need to do is make sure that moving forward, we are building a system where parents are constantly being involved and we're growing their numbers of involvement and giving them greater voice or efficacy in the district. Bottom line, I think if there's any number of messages that were sent yesterday, that's probably one of the foremost.
So when do they go back to the ballot at this point? Do you think it has to be after a resolution of the scrubbing scandal, after the investigation is completed? What sort of timeline do you see ahead?
To me, it's letting the dust settle on that issue first and foremost and bringing some finality to that. In addition, it's the district coming forward with a strategic plan, okay, a vision and a plan. And that plan must include families, parents, leaders, everybody coming to the table and figuring out how we move the district forward, with student achievement being number one priority. At the end of the day, mom, dad, and everybody else who has some sort of stakeholdership in our district want to make sure that our kids are succeeding, and this moniker of failure gets trashed. And that's definitely what I want to see. I'm tired of everyone shaping our narrative, and more importantly, shaping it from the and framing it from the standpoint of our children failing. And there's so many of our children who are doing well and so many who can do much better. We've definitely got work to do. Let's change that failure moniker.
Michael, should charters be a part of the next package, or is that done now? Should they be sharing levy money with, you know, publicly funded but privately run charter schools?
You know, if there's something that was conveyed to me via yesterday election results, is that I'm not all that sure the community is really ready to look at urban education holistically by including charter schools. So my answer to that, just from what I've observed, would be no. I think folks really want to say, how do we right our ship and fix our product? Because once our product is fixed, then and our schools become the competitive place that they need to be, then what is the use for a charter school?
Michael, on the east side in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You voted for the levy. I wanted to hear from one of the minority. Hi, Michael.
Hello?
Hi.
Yes.
You're on the air.
I was initially in support of the levy. Actually, I guess in political speak, I was for it before I was against it. And at the last minute, I changed my mind and joined, I guess, what became a landslide to overturn these two issues for the reasons that the gentleman that just spoke alluded to, as well as Mr. Gresham. I think there's a big credibility gap between the community at large and the establishment. And I think that the establishment, it keeps using like a old playbook that is kind of old in terms of, you know, getting the black preachers on the radio to turn out the black vote and having the football coach, you know, do a spot to promote it. And he just got to the city. He really doesn't know what's been going on here with the school system. Hmm. I don't even know if his kids, you know, are in the school system. They might go to Upper Arlington or somewhere else, but
Urban Meyer's from Dublin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. So you know, he doesn't even have a vested interest in the outcome. So obviously there was some corporate influence that led to Ohio State putting him up as the new guy in town, the leader of our undefeated, you know, football team, to pass a levy that was bunk. I mean, you know, to put it mildly. And so those kind of things really need to change. People need to stop insulting working class people's intelligence and pandering to corporate money and you know, banking interests and things like that, because the political strategists on both sides of the aisle — I majored in political science, okay, went to Denison University — on both sides of the aisle are out of touch with most working class white people and most working class black people. They're just out of touch. Culturally, they are out of touch.
Okay.
And so if we're going to have a democracy, if we're going to have a political conversation, then we need to involve those voices who have not lost touch with the grassroots, who come, in fact, from the grassroots, but have the education, as Mr. Gresham has, and the training to actually implement some alternative policy solutions. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks a lot. And Michael Cole, thanks to you as well. I appreciate it.
Oh, no, thank you for having me. Let's move our district forward.
All right. Congratulations on your election.
Thank you.
All right. Joining us now really quickly, we have just a few minutes left. I wanted to talk with Jessica Valtellini. She's Vice President for Legal and Legislative Affairs from the Ohio Alliance for Public Charter Schools. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Using property tax revenue to fund charter schools was one of the issues in the race, or in the levy race. It would have set a precedent in Ohio if voters had approved the levy. Is this a setback for the charter school effort in Ohio? What do you make of this?
We at the Alliance don't necessarily think of this levy as a setback for charters. This is the second time in the state, the second big Urban 8 school district, where we've seen the law change to permit, the levy proposal to include for the first time levy dollars for charters. I think that our stakeholders in charter world in Columbus would agree that, you know, what is most important is creating high quality public schools, both district schools and charter schools, for all of our students. So I don't think that our mission, our conversation that we're having from a school choice charter perspective is going to change around quality. It's something that we are always working on. And we are committed, I think the community is committed to working together with the city school board, the superintendent, the mayor's office, the city council, parents, the business community, and all the stakeholders on really trying to create high-quality options for all our kids.
I talked to some charter supporters along the way. They were concerned that if the levy succeeded, Columbus City Schools would have imposed more rules on charter schools that had, you know, that were chosen to participate. Would that have been a concern at all to backers of purist charters, you know, the whole idea not being bound by the same rules and regulations?
Yes. Autonomy is always an issue that comes up when we talk about school choice and charters. I think that even among the charter community, there was support and opposition to the levy because there was a lack of transparency about what this partnership would look like between the charters who would be available to get some of the levy proceeds. So there were still some facts unknown on what that partnership would look like between the quality charter schools who could partner with the district and what the standards would be. So those unknowns helped with the charter supporters because we just didn't know how that flow of money would work.
Jessica Valtellini, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Jessica Valtellini of the Ohio Alliance for Public Charter Schools. Mike Thompson, thanks as well to you for joining us today.
Thank you, Ann.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.